He'll get the nicest room if he decides to move in with us, which I'm going to force him to. He's not really going to have a choice.
I love that you're wearing your joy sweater.
Yes, I thought I should wear it today. I had to show it to my brothers.
Nice.
Yeah. But what are you guys up to? How's it going? How's Texas?
It's what it is.
It's Texasing.
Yeah, I feel that. America's American-ing, so, you know.
We've got a Fort Worth substitute teacher calling ICE on his students.
I saw that. Oh, my God. Fucking horrendous, these people.
Yeah, so Texas is great. Everyone come.
I mean, I feel like everyone's moving to Texas anyway, so.
I know.
No, I'm trying to get out of here, actually.
Everyone's moving here and making the traffic 100 times worse.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, probably I'd like to leave off the planet, but, you know, I'll settle for out of state.
Yeah, if they need volunteers for that colony on Mars, can't be any worse than here.
Literally. Actually, no, I would die. I want to go to space so bad.
I could not.
But I'm so picky and particular.
You?
No, not at all. That I could not follow like a regimen or like this is all you have to do and to eat and to
sleep on.
I never even thought about that. I just thought like, yay, get me out of here. Like I didn't even think about the logistics of what it would entail.
When it comes to traveling, the first like. My stomach drops just thinking about the food situation because I have such anxiety about food.
That's true.
So it's like, what is there going to be to eat? I don't want to like mess with anybody wanting to explore and do fun things, but also like I got to make sure I can eat. So,
I think just like it's going into space sounds like insane. That doesn't sound like something like a normal person could do. That just.
I mean, people have done it.
Like, I don't know.
Like, a lot of times.
I'm totally fine with, like, flying in planes and shit. But, like, a space? There's nothing there. I don't want to.
Take me now.
Yeah, that's why I want to go. Because there's nothing there.
There's nothing for anyone to ruin. Yet.
Not yet. We'll find a way, though, us humans. We'll do it.
Man. You know.
What's that
There's
quote?
One thing they can do.
What movie or show is it? They're like, that's so uniquely human to take something and like make it terrible just a little bit so it can prolong the longevity of it. What? That's a quote from something.
I can't remember. It's from somewhere, but I can't remember what it's from.
I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like that. Like,
mm-hmm.
Just ruin it just a little bit so you can, you know, extend its. That's very human.
Yeah.
So hi, friends. Hey, welcome to season eight. Can you believe that?
Whoa.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Season eight of What We Have Thoughts, a podcast about movies. I'm Crystal.
I'm Joy.
And I'm Anna.
And we're three girly pops yapping about the 2025 Best Picture nominees. The first movie that we're going to be giving our unfiltered thoughts on is Dune Part 2. I know this isn't an alphabetical order. It's just in the order that we need to do it because we have lives and we're busy. We got to do what we got to do. Anyways, synopsis: Paul Atreides unites with the Fremen while on a warpath of revenge against the conspirators that destroyed his family. Facing a choice between the love of his life and the fate of the universe, he endeavors to prevent a terrible future. Along with Best Picture, it's nominated for Best Cinematography, Greg Fraser, Best Sound, Gareth John, Richard King, Ron Bartlett and Doug Hemphill, Best Visual Effects, Paul Lambert, Stephen James, Reese Salcom, and Gert Nefzer, and Best Production Design, Shane Viu, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, I'm so sorry, Set Direction, and Patrice Vermette, Production Designer. With five nominations total, this is Dune Part 2. So, girlies, what do we think of Dune Part 2? And who is your Lisan Al-Ghaib to you? Who's that to you?
Lisan Al-Ghaib. Oh, my God. Who's my Lisan Al-Ghaib? Maybe Lady Gaga, I think.
Yeah, that tracks for you, actually.
Who would be mine?
Joni Mitchell.
Oh, that's a good one. It would probably be Stephen Sondheim.
Okay, also a good one. Great one for you. Crystal, what about you?
That's a good answer. I don't know, because I think I may have said this before. I'm not, like, someone who worships, like, a celebrity in that way. I have infatuations with them. I guess not to be a celebrity, to be honest with you. But who do I don't know. Not that I don't look up to people and admire them and think they're, like, everything, but... Like, they're just people. Like, they're not...
You can say my name. It's okay.
How do you pronounce full of herself? Oh, Anna. Yeah, I'm sorry. My bad. I got it. Bitch. Yeah. No, I just don't... I'm not a... I just don't... Like, I like Lady Gaga, and I think Stephen Sondheim's amazing, and there's a lot of people that I adore and love and admire in that way, but I just, like, there's just people. Like, I'm not gonna... Maybe because I come from, like, growing up in church, and that all kind of sounds the same to me. Like, anyways, whatever. What do you think of the movie?
It's not really like a joke in your personality. So you can say, yeah. You can say Sebastian Stan or whatever. No, you know?
But even then, like, he's made some choices that I don't like. So, like, I'm not going to follow that.
I know.
I don't think any human is, like, worthy of Frizzle. I guess. Miss Frizzle? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Miss Frizzle.
Sure. Yeah, why not?
Or Elmo. You know, something.
He's 5, okay? He doesn't need followers.
Yeah, but he's amazing.
Oh? He needs hugs.
He's kind.
You know what?
He's okay. A great example for kids.
I know. I found my person. Steve from Blue's Clues. That's a waffle. My
there you go.
That's so cute.
That's perfect.
That was good. But it also is very much like a not in your personality thing to like not have an answer for this.
I guess that tracks. You know what's funny is that's like Steve from Blue's Clues will just post videos that just all he's saying is, hey, how you doing? And I'll burst into tears. Just because he'll like, I'm not kidding you. Like, he'll post a video. He's saying, hey, how are we doing today? How are you doing? And then he'll be silent for like a solid 4 or 5 seconds. And then he's like, you look great today. Yeah. And then he'll turn off the video. And I'm like,
oh,
so there you go.
So cute.
Anyways, so what do we think of the movie?
All right, bitch. Is everyone ready to hear me for 2 full hours not shut up about this fucking movie?
Yeah. Okay.
Here we go. Let's go. I have a shot list that is endless, which is basically the whole movie, but we'll do that at the very towards the end. I am very upset, and I was very upset when the nominations came out, because how can you tell me this is all that you're nominating this movie for? How could it not be in director, in cinematography, in editing?
It is cinematography.
No, it's not.
Yes.
Isn't it Greg Fraser?
Is it?
Thanks for listening to me when I spoke. That's nice. I love that.
Well, I saw the list and it wasn't on there. Oh, it is. Just kidding. Okay. But how can it only be those things? No director, no editing. Timothée Chalamet was nominated for the wrong movie. It should have been for Dune 2. It shouldn't have been for whatever the other one is.
Unknown.
You know, I'm not there yet.
I know, but I just saw it, so the songs are all in my head.
When it happened, I was like, well, you know what? I'm sorry, Denis, that they do not get you like I do. Like, I'm so sorry.
Right?
But you know what? I think this might be okay, because I have a feeling this seems very Christopher Nolan. Like, they didn't get Christopher Nolan for a long, long time. That Oscar for Oppenheimer took a bit. So I have a feeling that, you know, his time will come. He's super talented, and he has yet to make a wrong move, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And you know what? What? Looking at Denis' filmography, I honestly would have given him Best Director for at least 3 other things that he's done. So
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You're right. He hasn't made a wrong move. All of his, everything that I've seen so far, there's still some holes in my...
That's fair. Me too.
In his filmography, but everything I've seen has been epic and great and like so well done. But the big category that I'm sad about that's not nominated for is costumes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because some of them were repeats, but there were so many new costumes in this between like Lady Jessica's and Princess Irulan. Yeah. So I was eating up everything Florence Pugh was wearing. Like,
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that the wardrobe was great. Also, how she wore it. Like, it could have easily overtaken her, but I think because she is a phenomenal actress in her own right, she didn't have a lot to do. But I feel like, similar to Zendaya in part one, you're getting the seeds of who she is. And by the next movie, you're going to be like, yeah, this is her movie. So, yeah. I'm excited to see what goes on. And plus, we really love her on this podcast, Florence. So,
yeah.
We're all about her. Yeah, I think that whole... If that's the reason why it wasn't costumes, because it was similar to the other movie, that's dumb. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I had the thought that it might be similar to why they couldn't be nominated for music. Score. And it's because they're using so much of the same stuff from the first film.
Which I don't understand, because we'll get there. But, like, Wicked was also nominated for score. And it uses part of the music from the stage show. So, like, how is that not the same thing? But whatever. Go ahead. We'll get there when we get there. Yeah, I think from the first couple of frames, it's beautiful. And I feel like I'm going to be reiterating a lot of things that I saw up in the first movie. Like, it's gorgeous. Right. The fights are great. The acting is great. The star power in this movie. Like, it feel... I didn't feel like a movie I would like, because it feels like a lot of, like, lore that I'm just like, that's a lot of stuff I don't want to hear. But, like, I'm into it, so... My attention span was, like, loved it. Loved it.
Yeah, I was rewatching it. I was obsessed with the color story in, like, a desert environment. There's so many different textures and colors. And I found it so beautiful.
Yeah.
Again. Mm-hmm. But I forget. It was, like, my second note. So it must have been early on, like, one of those opening scenes. I was just like, the different tones of this red brown,
yes,
are so beautiful and so like breathtaking that it doesn't get old. You're looking at this planet of sand, and you're just like, show me more.
Yeah,
I want more sand.
Right,
and I think lesser artists would not know how to make that interesting.
Right,
do such a real good job of, like you said, of creating the texture in this, like, simple colors. That's fantastic.
I think that has a lot to do with the, I think in part of that is the costumes, and part of that is the production design. Because, like, every area, every environment had a different, like, palette and had a different, like, texture. Mm-hmm. Like, everything for the Harkonnens was, like, it was very cold and smooth and, like, plastic and, like, untouchable almost. And then you get to everything on Arrakis, and it feels gritty. It feels like lived in. You can see the history of these people. The production design and the costumes work together. It seemed like, okay, this is a people that has been here for like hundreds of thousands of years. It made sense. And it was really, really well done. I was watching some of the behind the scenes for the production design, and a lot of those, like, were real live sets that they constructed, which is incredible to have done all of that too. But the way they put it together, it reminded me kind of how, like, what is it called? What was that movie with Olivia Colman and...
The Favorite?
Yes, thank you. Where they use the laser cut leather and the denim, like the contemporary materials, but in a Victorian setting or whatever period it was. But this felt like these materials, but being used in a future setting where it also feels like it's been around for a long time. It's been, like, preserved intact. Especially, I think in particular, the like apartments or the house where the princess and the emperor lived, that is actually like a palace in Italy, like not a palace, but it's either a funeral or a temple home in Italy that they used. And I found it on Google, and it's so beautiful. Like, you can go there and you can visit. And I'm like, I'm putting it on the list. I want to go see this because, like, The way they shot it, it looks beautiful even in like Google pictures, but the way they shot it, it looks so majestic. It's showing off the architecture and the space to the best of its ability.
Shout out to the scouting person who found that.
When they were, like, exactly.
That's amazing. It's gorgeous. That sounds like a cool job to be like, let me go around and find a place for this movie. Mm-hmm. Similar to what you were saying about how, you know, the Harkonnens feel very, you know, that, you know, not as lived in as their Fremen do. I think that's also reflected in their movement, how the Fremen move much like the sand. It's very like loose and they're one with the ground, whereas the Harkonnen are very militant and, you know, also they're terrified because like they could get killed at any second. I love that. That's shown in pretty much everything. They're from their wardrobe to their way of speaking to the way they walk, their movement. I thought that was really, really great.
And also like their respect for the dead and how they have those pools of like, there's so much history and there's so many, like, that's a lot of water that came from a lot of people. Like that is literal history just standing there in that pool. But back to the Harkonnens, I loved the use of the infrared camera there. That black and white
girl
was so stunning. Delicious. And like
stunning.
The stark difference between that and what's the name of the planet?
Arrakis.
Arrakis. My head was in another universe. I could not think of Arrakis.
I forgot that we all saw this together the day after Oscars. That was dope, by the way. And we fell asleep.
Yeah.
And I do remember, like, I'm pretty sure all of us went when the black and white came on.
That's when everyone woke up.
I loved the arena of it, like the gladiator arena of it. I loved the guards that are surrounding Austin Butler. Their costume was so fucking cool. So
cool. Yeah.
And I loved how like weird and kind of creepy they were. I want to sit there and like look at a still of it and just like inspect every image and then go to the next still and just, I want to absorb everything
similar
from it.
Similar in how
it was like, so delicious.
Like the servants that were like servicing them, they all kind of looked the same, but they had a very interesting look. Like they were all like, they were no hair, just very stark white. But like, it was just so interesting. It was so interesting.
And I also loved the Harkonnens, and I can't think of the right word, the battleships that that would land on Arrakis that the Fremen would attack.
Right.
But like the shell look of them. I loved it. They looked almost like a bug of some sort. Like they were like a centipede landing on the sand. Of this. Yeah. Because I don't know what it was, but I loved the design of those as well. Because I was like, I don't think that's what they were flying into Arrakis, but I don't think it's the closest thing I think of was a battleship. So that's what I called it.
A submarine, but not in the water. You know what I mean?
Right. In the sand.
I think we also talked about in the first movie how much we liked the dragonfly copters.
Yeah.
The ornithopters.
I thought those were neat. Speaking of that whole thing with the vessel, I love that whole scene where Zendaya and Timmy are during that attack and they're using the movement of the legs to stay out of view of the helicopter. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So cool. Brilliant. And then that's
brilliant.
That moment where they shoot it down and it's silence and Zendaya's running across screen and it's silent until you hear the crash of the cinema, y'all. Cinema.
Yeah.
That is cinema.
There's another great part where it was just like silent. There's no score. There's no additional noise. It's in towards the end where Fade and Paul are fighting.
Yes.
And all it is just you just hear the like the hit of everything. Yes, yes. And it was just so perfect because like all the focus should be there. And even though you have like the set and the other cast and everything, it's just like sound wise, that was very, very effective.
It was a smart move to not have any like score around it because it didn't need it. It didn't at all.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. When we talk about editing in general, this is what we mean. Like being able to edit your film and know what needs it and what doesn't. And that's a perfect example.
Yeah. 100%. Back to like the production design, which love that it's nominated because it was the little things like the vessel that Lady Jessica drinks from was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And then watching them extract from the sandworm. I want to play in this world. I want to touch all the little things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to like see the carvings on the wall. I want to touch the fabrics. I want to like play in it.
Like also something as simple as like, I don't know what it was called, but that huge room where they're in like right before Timmy gives his speech and Zendaya is like, religion is wrong or whatever she says. Just the way that's lit. It's lit just so, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it's, you can feel it's a huge room. That's the lighting go off, the set design going off, like everybody's
oh
going
oh my
off.
God.
It's so good.
The lighting, because I watched the behind the scenes thing and watching them light all of these scenes that happen like inside of the caves, inside of the mountain, the way they lit that, the way they had to bounce the light off of everything in order for it to look correct. Wow. The skill, the artistry. I'm going to have to find pictures of the lighting equipment they use because it's so, there was one thing, I don't know if you guys know what a softbox is, but it's like one big major bulb mm-hmm. and it's supposed to be covered in like a thin white sheet. And that's what diffuses the light and it makes it soft. So it gets on everything right. evenly. But this one, it was like, different circles of like that. So there was like a focus mm-hmm. one in the middle and then a ring on the outside and then another ring. I really want to look into how they use that because it was like perfectly diffused for all of the scenes. It was very interesting.
I love that.
That's very cool.
The lighting, really the cool. lighting, whoever did the lighting in this, awards, perfect. Chef's kiss.
So question, maybe we should know this, but when it comes to something that's good lighting, what category is that? Is that
I think it falls
offense?
Into cinematography too.
Okay.
Because they help like set up the shot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I don't know.
I believe so.
Just a real quick thing about colors again. I loved the starkness of the blue of the liquid that Jessica drinks, the venom.
Yeah.
Because everything with the Fremen are such warm earth tones, and then the cool gray and the brown of their suits and everything. And then there was this stark, bright blue.
It was beautiful.
Liquid. It was so beautiful, and it like was reminiscent of their eyes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I loved that.
Yeah.
I loved, back to what I was talking about, like how the Fremen move. I love that move. They did it several times, but I was gagging every time. Where they're hiding under in the sand and they pop out.
Yeah,
like, the agility of all of that was so good.
It's so cool. And like the tools that they use where they have that little mouth breather thing to stick out of the sand. Awesome. And that way it just like moves with the breath. Oh, genius.
Like gills or something of a fish.
Yeah, exactly.
Fantastic.
I know the sand is very different than sand I've been on because I'm thinking of the dunes in South Padre Island and how I can't even walk up them. You know?
Well, also, if like that's all you but know, then, you get used to like having to.
But that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking like how hard it must have been to like get used to it and to work on that. Like that shot of Timmy running across the top of that dune. I love that shot. It's so beautiful because he looks so minuscule just running up again on the top. But, like, that must have been, like, high knees because you can't let your feet sink into the sand. Or
also,
you're a goner.
Yeah, speaking of that scene, like, another moment that I was like, cinema was when he is, he gets on the worm and he stands up and the music swells.
Yes!
Yeah.
Cinema.
Like, this movie was nominated for Best Director. Like, are you serious? And then it's probably not going to win the Best Picture, which makes me even more upset.
Yeah.
What?
Insane. Absolutely insane.
Oh, my God.
Also, like you said, we're the girly pops talking girly poppy things. Can we talk about how beautiful Timothy's hair is in this movie?
Yeah. He's got some. No. Yeah. Like,
hair and makeup. His hair's why didn't they get nominated? Yeah.
Like, his hair's pretty good in every movie, to be fair. But I feel like just the way the wind was moving it, I was like,
good job. Just you wait. If we're talking about his hair, just you wait. It's not beautiful in every movie.
That's okay.
But in this one, those curls and that, like, salty spray, like, it looked like he was using an ocean sea salt
like
spray.
Like a texture spray. Yes, exactly. <Yeah. laughs>
Sir, it does so, this works so well for you.
On the other end of that, Zendaya looked phenomenal. She, I feel like she fits so well with the Fremen, like, I guess, aesthetic.
Yeah.
I really loved it. She looked beautiful as well.
I loved the choice to keep her hair as natural as possible, because they easily could have given her a big Brazilian blowout. And that way, when it was back, it was beautiful and sleek. But no, it was just raw and unkempt, but not unkempt in like a dirty way, but just in like a
realistic way.
Yeah, exactly. Because she's a fighter. She's like, I got stuff, I got it too. Like, I don't have time to
It's back, it's out of the way, but it's not fussy. She's not, it's not a fussy thing.
Yeah.
And the, you know, like, no makeup. I really appreciated that she's this beautiful figure that he's dreaming about in the first film, but she's so real in this film.
Yeah. Yeah. Just props to her. Honestly, look, I could nominate this movie for so many things, and Zendaya as supporting actress would be one of them. Let's just do it, because she was doing so much, and especially that she had such limited dialogue, and so much of the acting she's doing is with her face and the reaction to what, you know, how Paul is behaving. And Denis even talked about it in the behind the scenes. He's like, Zendaya is supposed to be that person that sees him through like a realistic lens. She doesn't get swayed by the, like, I'm the Messiah bullshit of whatever. She actually sees him for who she is. And that perspective, I think, was, like, really rich. And to do it as being an observer versus just being, like, a commentator, I think that was really smart. And she did such a good job about it. Such a beautiful, beautiful work.
Agreed.
I love that Paul has so many names. He's Paul Atreides. He's Lisa Nagaib, he's Muad'Dib, he's Usul, he's Kwisatz Haderach. Like, dude.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was like, what was the other one? That's right.
Yeah.
You got, like, 10 names. Trying to trim it down.
Literally, like, when this movie came out, and, like, I would be on the phone with my brothers, we'd like, be calling each other and be like, Lisa Nagaib! And we would just say that for forever. And now that we just watched it again yesterday, I'm not going to shut up about it. It's back.
Yep.
Love it.
Same. It came out all the time. I'd be sitting there doing nothing, like, Lisa Nagaib.
Also, get you someone who believes in you that much, as much as Javier Bardem believes in tennis. Like, it was written one. Like, he just knows.
Yeah.
There was literally that one Lisa Nagaib that, like, literally, he was quiet and he was like, Lisa Nagaib.
Yeah.
Like, jump scare.
I think it was during that, like, when he first says something, or when he comes from back from the dead. I can't remember. I just saw it.
Yeah. Yes, I think it's the resurrection.
Yeah, resurrection. Yeah.
Oh, but I did love the reveal of, like, the prophecy is that he will be brought back by Desert Springs Tears, and her name is Desert. Like,
Spring. Romantic.
Love it. Yeah. I was like, oof, that's good writing. That's good writing.
Oh my God. The journey that they go on from, like, oh, she just has to teach him, you know, her culture's ways, to, like, oh, like, there's so many shots of him just looking at her, and he does such a good job conveying, like, I'm so in love with just that one look. And I was like, oh, he's fallen. He's done. Like, that's it. That's it.
And it's crazy that we're watching this movie in, you know, 2025. It came out last year. And of course, the book's been out for forever. And the first adaptation was in the 80s. But, like, this book was the blueprint for so much of the sci-fi we have today.
Yeah.
Like, watching them two fall in love, you're watching, it's the same as Jake and what's her name in Avatar?
Oh, yeah, Jake
and Amy. I thought you said Jake and Amy. I was like, girl, that's the show. That's different.
Jake and, God, what's her name? Zoe Saldana.
Talked about this.
We literally,
it's so similar. Like, he's coming and crash landing on her area, and she's got to, you know, incorporate him into.
It's also Pocahontas.
It's also a little bit Star Wars with Leia and Han Solo.
Well, I think George Lucas did mention that he was inspired by Dune when he created.
This was the blueprint for Star Wars.
What's the fucking planet called? Whatever. I can't remember the planet on Star Wars. I forgot.
Tatooine?
Tatooine.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. With the two sons.
Yeah, yes, yes. Because that's where Luke's from. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is kind of cool to see what is the inspiration for so much that we've known already.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like when we watched Rear Window. You were like, oh, now I get it. Yeah.
Or even Citizen Kane. Like, the stuff that watching clicked when we saw that.
Blueprint.
Movie. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun. So I have a question. How? So Lady Jessica goes to the South, you know, to gather whatever. Now tell me how they get that basket egg on the worm. Did they just like throw it on there? Like, how did she? How did they? The worm doesn't stop for them to like dock. So like, how does that work?
They throw her on there.
I have questions. I was like, wait a minute. If Jimmy Crystal's
interested in worm engineering.
I mean, yeah, I am.
That's a great question. I have no clue. I would just be like, toss.
Speaking of Jessica, Rebecca Ferguson, I think she's great. I love her costumes in this one. I love
her face tattoos. I love.
I appreciate her choices, but my God, her whisper speaking is so hard to understand. I don't, and I'm someone who doesn't really struggle a lot with listening to different accents.
Because
there's some people who are like, his Irish is so thick, I can't understand a word of it. I'm like, I understand every single word, bitch. Take me to Ireland. Take me to Scotland. Let me live with my people. But her whisper speaking, she does it so well to have that much like vocal control of it. But I'm like, girl, I need subtitles. I cannot.
Wow. I thought you watched it. And she never sleeps it.
I do, but like the first movie, I remember watching it going, oh, I'm gonna have to go home and rewatch all of this because so much of it is going. I mean, I know what's happening because I've read the book, but also like, what?
Have you read all of the books? Honor?
Just Dune.
Oh, okay.
I haven't read Dune Messiah or any of the other ones.
How many books are there in the series? Do you know?
I have no idea. Okay. Because it like goes off.
For like generations, right?
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, I really thought watching that Dune show.
Oh, I need to watch it. I haven't seen it.
I need to too. My dad watched it. He wasn't a huge fan.
Did he like Dune?
I think so, yeah.
Hmm.
It's about the
23 novels.
What? Oh. That's wild.
I believe the show is about the Bene Gesserit, if I remember correctly, right?
Yes, it is. Yes. About them putting in this plot into place, like, I don't know, like 400 or 500 years before or something like that. Okay. It's like hundreds of years before.
I just remembered about it right now.
So there are 6 original books.
Oh, okay. That sounds right.
They came out from 65 to 85. And then there's a prelude, which is House Atreides, House Harkonnen, House Corino. And then there's 3 Legends of Dune. It's a trilogy. Then there's a sequel duology. Heroes of Dune trilogy, Great Schools of Dune,
The Worms Attack,
and the Kaladin trilogy.
The worms come back, and they're pissed.
Worm books, engineering. By
worm
Crystal.
Engineering. Yeah. I don't
that's
know.
A lot of fucking also books.
I saw somebody jump on a worm like that, mount him, and like ride him, and be like, "All right, I'll follow you. Sure, yeah."
I guess you are Jesus. Sure.
The Great Schools of Dune, I'd be interested in reading because it's the sisterhood. So it would be the Bene Gesserit.
The Bene Gesserit.
And then the Mentats, which are like those. They were in the first film, and those are the guys that their eyes would gloss over. No, not the doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like human computers.
Mm-hmm.
And then wild. Navigators of Dune.
I want to see that. I'm terrible at maps. I'd like to learn.
I mean, yeah, it'd be interesting, but I'm more interested in the Bene Gesserit. Mm-hmm. I want to create a Bene Gesserit D&D class. Ooh. I think that'd be so sick. Oh, I'm that sure reminds me. Somebody's already like played with that. I don't know if I told
you, but Becky has said that she was wanting to join a D&D group. And I was like, oh, Anna, please. She's like, oh, yeah. It's like, but I don't live close. So I was like, oh, it's online. She goes, oh, really? She was like excited about it. So I told her to tell you. I don't know if she did or not.
We talked about it a little bit, but
okay. Yeah, because I was
getting into it.
I was telling Anna that Johnny wants to lead one too. And so I was like, okay, so we have to do it like us together so you guys can tell us what to do because we don't know anything.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about her experience when I told her about my games, but I don't know if we got into details about like finding a game.
Also, I didn't have her leather jacket either, so I don't know where it is.
Bro, who knows? I feel like it was behind the couch or something.
When we went to karaoke, I wore it, or someone's leather jacket, and so I thought I had. I was like, oh, crap. And I was like, oh, no, I don't, so.
Yeah, but I remember you leaving it behind the couch or on the couch or something like that, so it's somewhere.
I distinctly remember taking it off going, Becky, this is yours, where do you want it? She's like, I don't know, the floor. And I was like, okay. And then Sunday, she was, like, cleaning, so I was like, oh, she must have got it.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that was ass out, Becky.
Yeah.
Back to this movie.
Yeah. Any other notes you have?
Yes, I have 100 other notes.
I really love the lighting of the final fight between Fayette and Paul. That, like, soft lighting in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
That first shot of them getting ready, them in silhouette, gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
You know what? So many of the shots were in silhouette, and I think this movie and Denis did such a good job of executing them. There's a movie that we'll talk about later that was getting some shit because so many of their shots, they thought the lighting was off, that it was backlit, and like their main focal points were not well lit, and it would look gray and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I also have those critiques about it. But I think that in this, there was, because you're in the desert and the only light you have is the sun.
Yeah.
The majority of the time, things are going to be backlit or they're going to be in silhouette. But specifically, like, it was lit in a way that you can see everything in the foreground versus the background, even though 90% of the screen is just sun. And it's just light and it's just blacked out. So, like, I think it's possible to do backlit shots and execute your point and still, like, have that realism. Like, we were talking about the textures and the light and the environment. Mm-hmm. I think it's very doable, but your intention has to be there and it has to work for the story. You can't just muddle out the foreground and be like, oh, it's because it's backlit and it's realistic. Whatever. But we'll get there. So I'm just saying it can be done. This movie did it and they did it really fucking well. So other people need to either
take notes.
I don't know, take notes or, you know, partner with different cinematographers or different experts in lighting. I'm not the end all be all of lighting, but I could
not.
There's a couple of things they could have done. So I think it's just like, it's very lazy to just be like, oh, it's because it looks realistic and backlit shots, you know, in real life, you wouldn't have light in this side. I know it's not real life. It's a fucking movie.
Exactly.
So do it.
I think even in the scenes where it was dark, like I think of that scene or the sun was down where Zendaya and Timmy are doing their little like dance, their little choreographed dance together in the sand, mm-hmm. and they're doing the sand walks. It's mm-hmm. beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I don't know if it's just like because Game of Thrones just put out there the style of like everything's going to be dark and you're not going to see anything. So all these millions of dollars we're investing into production are just going to be for nothing. I don't know if everyone just hopped on that trend or something, but it's very much possible to do it and not have it look cheesy or cheap or like, you know, too much. If you work on it and, you know, are careful about it. So, yeah. But the lighting in this movie.
I know we like to give shit to Austin Butler for his Elvis voice, and rightfully so.
Girl.
But I do appreciate how much work he put into sounding like the Baron, to sounding like Stellan Skarsgård.
I thought he was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that...
He was so good.
He was so good, but I loved the attention to detail that he sounded like Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
he had that voice down. Smart move.
Yeah.
Smart
choice to do that. And I think when I first thought, I was like, I was very impressed with him because I had Elvis in my head and I had never seen anything other than that from him. And I was like, all right, what are you going to do? And I was very impressed. Like, he got the movement down, the, like, even the slight way that he would watch people from the top of his eyes or tilt his head or, like, a small little smile when things were, like, going on. Like, small little things that he would do that were really, really effective.
So good. I do wonder, and I need to do some research. I don't know if this was in the book and I forgot, but the Harkonnens are fat and diseased the way they are because the Reverend Mother that we meet in the first one and that we see with Florence Pugh, she is Jessica's mother.
Right.
Paul's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And so she and their Bene Gesseritness were like, we need to have the Harkonnens and the Atreides combined. That will bring about the Kwisatz Haderach. I think I'm saying that wrong, but whatever. So she goes to Harkonnen and is like, this needs to happen. And he's like, okay, but he brutally rapes her. So her punishment was to infect them with the obesity and the disease. But Fayette isn't like that. So it makes me wonder about his actual lineage.
Interesting. Oh, I didn't even think about that.
But like, even, is he actually a Harkonnen?
Well, neither is...
But even his uncle...
What the fuck is his name? The Drax from... I'm forgetting his name.
Yeah.
I also forgot his name. But him, he's not... He's like very...
But he is a big guy than Austin Butler. Austin Butler is much more
thin. Dave Bautista.
Dave Bautista, yes.
Beast Raban.
No. Yeah, Beast Raban. Yeah. He's a very, like, big, imposing, muscular figure. He doesn't look like, what's his name?
Baron got the worst of it.
So maybe just gets less and less as the next person goes or something?
Maybe. I don't know. That's why I'm like, I need to look into this because I'm not sure if it's said in the book and I'm forgetting. Mm. But I had that thought towards the end of the film. I was like, why isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But as Fayette is his nephew. His nephew. His son.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe
it's true. Lineage and somebody else's lineage together or something.
Now that I'm speaking out loud, I'm figuring it out.
No, yeah, we go.
Yay.
So tell me why I thought Javier Bardem was Zendaya's dad. I don't know why I thought that. I was like, wait, that's. Did I like
sure, make why not? In my head?
I don't know why I thought that.
He does have like a very like paternal figure towards like towards Paul, so maybe that just extended towards Johnny.
I don't know why.
You know what is my favorite piece of the score is Johnny's song in the score and where that's used like when they kiss on top of one of the dunes, just her and Paul, and it's just like dune. And them on the top. And then at the very end.
Panning shot around them.
No. Yeah.
We don't get the Jumanji shot.
Oh, yeah.
And then at the end where she's, like, hurt and betrayed. And she's just, like, getting out. And she, like, wants to run away from this. The music is so effective. And then her face acting there. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. It's so good. She had two amazing movies this year. And I was like, so happy for her. She was doing so good.
I like the direction in that scene because it's Lisa Nagaiben. They everyone bows down to him except for Zendaya and Florence. I think it's Christopher Walken. I love that direction because it just sees how like separate that they are from everybody.
Yeah.
With just one move. So good.
And I love, she's so mad at him. She's so angry at him. Yeah. And then he comes up to her and he's like, I'll always love you as long as I breathe. And then he turns around and says, I'm marrying you. And still, she's so mad at him, but still, like, the shock of it and the hurt was so evident, so present. Ugh, that broke me.
I know. That was, you know what I love, and I think that I've mentioned this before, I think in particular with, like, I think it was Arrival and then Interstellar. I love when sci-fi or adventure movies like this, they have to be grounded in some sort of like emotional investment. Like if it's just like, woo, sci-fi and fights and whatever, like that's fun. But I think when it goes the extra mile of like them being like a real emotional story in the middle of it, I think it does so much for the movie as a whole. And I can appreciate it so much more rather than just like, ooh, boom, yay, action, which is also fun. But it's much more, it makes it so much more complex and more interesting overall.
And I appreciated the choice to give Chani more agency there at the end. Because I think in the book, she is just more compliant and stands by his side.
And I feel like that's a good example of like elevating a female character to more modern type of storytelling than like making her like a Mary Sue or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Agency is a good word for that.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I think this movie does so many things as well. But one of the things that Denis does so good is portraying scale. There's so many wide shots and people, the characters are so small in the middle. And I think it was like 5 or 6 different shots throughout the movie where there's a dune and like the one where Paul's walking up to get, you know, to the top for the worm. The one at the very beginning where everything is like orange. There's so many of those where you can see the scale of where they are. And I think that is so important in building the environment. And he just excelled.
The obvious one is where the worm, the face of the worm comes in through the shadows and you see all those little bitty people in the front. Like a really good example of that too. I love the shot in the beginning where the Harkonnen hop off like the dune cliff and they just kind of float off.
Oh my God. It's so good. That's the first time in the movie when I was watching in the theater, I was like, I'm levitating. It's so good. I'm just like ascending by how good the cinematography is. I was like,
Delicious. This was my first rewatch. I had not watched this since we saw it in theaters almost a year ago, and I slept through some of it.
Shut up!
Eric and I had gone like maybe a week later, and I was like, oh yeah, that was worth sleeping. That was worth seeing again, because I think I slept for a little bit before the final battle. I was like, I don't remember any of this. Oh, because I missed Anya Taylor-Joy completely. So then afterwards I was like, wait, she was in it?
What's crazy is watching this back, I don't know what I missed because I remember most of it. So I think most of my sleeping was nodding off and then just like jerking myself awake. So I didn't actually miss too much.
Not like Gladiator 2. I didn't even know
that. Not like Gladiator 2.
Oh my God. So on and I saw Gladiator 2 too early in the morning. That was a mistake. But then later that day, I was looking on Twitter and I was like, wait, there was a shark in there? Completely missed it. I was like, Anna, did you know there was a shark? Girl.
That I was awake for that battle.
Not me.
Because I remember thinking, oh, they've jumped it now.
She'd be like, did you see this? You see this shark? What the?
No, because I was barely awake for it. I was like, a shark.
Yeah, we were excited and whatever.
Yeah.
But the parts I did see,
that was hot.
I had a good time. My eyes burned. I wasn't here for the accuracy. It was not a history lesson. Okay, that's not what I wanted.
That's not what we wanted. That's not what it was for.
Okay, so I'm gonna see what other notes I have left.
I have a shot list whenever we're ready.
Go ahead.
It's 100,000 pictures long.
I'm gonna count them all.
Okay, go. The shot up into the trees where the Emperor and Princess Irulan, the first time we see them, it's like walking through the trees and the sunlight is coming down and the trees are like all squiggly. Beautiful. The shot of the planet into the red sun. Ugh, amazing. The shot of the floating Harkonnens onto the rock. We already did that one. It was so good. The shot of Jessica silhouetted against the sun killing the Harkonnen guy because Paul did not pay attention and his mom had to do it for him. The way Paul looks at Chani with love in his eyes the first time he's like really falling in love. All she's showing him is like, oh yeah, you put this thing in the other thing and you do that. And he's just like, heart eyes.
Also, so her cute. Voice slowly goes out because he's just like
enthralled. He's on another level. The entire worm scene, writing the worm scene, all of it. Phenomenal. All of it. Cinnamon, spice, everything nice. So good. The running against the sun, amazing. The fact that that was done not VFX and like there, he's really running on a dune, which is crazy. Stunt guy, shout out to the stunt guy. Wait, where are my other shots? Jessica just looking crazy when she's getting possessed. The shot reflecting on the pool of everybody's dead water in that temple place. Ugh, amazing. What else? Oh my God, there's so much. The shot of Paul looking out through the scope of the gun thing, that whole scene, too many things. Again, more shots of like the big Harkonnen vessel. And tiny Paul and Chiani. The shot of them being in love on top of the dune. The shot of his ring, the close-up of his father's ring. I can't. Oh my god. The shot when he's seeing the prophecy and his mom is walking into the sun and everyone's like dying around them. Amazing.
It was kind of similar to, I thought of Book of Life where Jessica Chastain is walking in like that. Very similar.
It's very similar. Oh wait, these are just shots of my cat. That's not that what it is.
Tree of Life. Sorry, you said Tree of Life. I was thinking Book of Life, and I was like, I haven't that seen was that animated. One. Also a good movie.
The claymation one. Oh, that's so great. The shot before you see Anya Taylor-Joy's face, and you just see dune and then water.
Yeah. Lovely.
Amazing, incredible, talented, brilliant. I can't, never the same, totally original, never been done before. The shot of Paul walking away. Now he's like, he drank the thing of life. Now he's the Messiah. He's living it. My favorite fucking shot of the whole fucking movie, I think, is when there's the crowd of people when he's going to go speak. And the first shot Fremen. You see, that crowd of the Fremen, and the first shot you see is like a bunch of close-ups of their face where Paul's about to go walk through them. And then you see one pan out shot where it's diagonal and you see the crowd. But then the big pan out shot overhead, just Paul walking through the crowd. Fucking stunning. Wow. And literally it lasts 2 seconds. Rewatched it and I was like, I felt like this shot lasted 10 minutes, but it lasted 2 seconds. And I was like, this is fucking cinema. It's so impactful
in those small amount of time. That's fantastic.
Yes, yeah. It's cinema because they all look like little grains of sand and they're people. It's amazing. Phenomenal. Oh my God. Okay. I think okay. What's her name? The Bene Gesserit lady, the French lady. Leah Sidu, whatever. Whenever the first shot of her in black and white where she has the little glasses.
Yeah.
Amazing. The first shot of the triangle arena, stunning. The first shot of Jessica with tattoos, amazing. That's all I got. All right.
That was 19.
Yay! You don't have to go through the mask. We're not in a rush. I also like the shot of the shot behind Austin Butler as the doors open in front of him to the arena. And you see it's like a what is this shape?
Like this. Oval?
Oval, yeah, thank you. It's the sorry, the door's open. It creates an oval around him.
Yeah,
out. Gorgeous. I also like that. I don't know, it's not really a shot, but I like the way that the floating light that Josh Brolin throws into the cave when they're getting all the ammunition, the way it illuminates the room is beautiful because it goes through like one part, it's like a square, and then it's a circle, and then it turns around. Like that was so cool. I loved all of that.
Another set piece I really loved was at the beginning of the movie, you see Florence Pugh talking into what you assume is some kind of microphone recording device. And then later on in another one, when she's talking, you can see the little cylinder, like writing everything she's saying out. I loved that.
Yeah. So cool.
I also loved the message when it was sent on the metal tube.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
How
I
want to
know how. Yeah. I want to know like how they do that before they send it off. Like, do they have someone that's like, I don't know. Is it like a chisel or is it like a stick? Like, I want to know. Right?
Tell me more. So when we see Denis, we're going to ask him about the little messenger tube and the logistics of the...
Worm riding.
How worm, do you get the... Worm...
engineering.
Right. Engineering. Yeah, I got a question.
You know what? I think this movie really, really exemplifies also, you know, editing. Editing. Because there's such a big cast of characters and you get to see everybody gets a story. Everybody gets their piece of the pie. And like it doesn't feel rushed. And I know it's like a long fucking movie, but it doesn't feel like a chore. It feels like everything is there for a reason.
It's well paced for sure.
It's well paced. Like just when things are kind of slowing down, something happens and it gets crazy again. And like it feels like even though it was only two something hours, it feels like we've lived with these people and in this culture.
And also as a testament, I think, to the writing, in the sense that like a smaller writer would have wanted to keep, with reasons, you know, everyone in the first movie, because that's a star-packed movie as well. Mm-hmm. But they need to die in order for other things to happen. So like they can only really be one movie with them, or even less. So I think the people that come in, it leaves them room to breathe and do something without taking anything away from the ones that we already know, which I think is really good.
Screenplay for sure. Editing for sure. Denis Villeneuve, how dare they? I'm insulted for you, honestly. You're the only good thing to come out of France this year. Period. And I'll get back to that fucking later. Bitch, don't worry. I got another 2 hours in me.
So... any last notes that you have?
I really just love that opening where it's just the Harkonnens and their voice saying power over spies. Like, it's just like, especially because there's nothing on the screen.
Yeah.
Nothing on the screen. Just the voice. I was like, what a way to start. This is going to be good.
I think it's funny when they say like, okay, we have to drink the water of life or, you know, you can die. And Timmy is like, is it dangerous? And she's like, it's lethal for men. I was like,
that's why he's the Lisa Nagaib.
Exactly.
Lisa Nagaib.
when Paul stands up at cinema, how does
I said that everywhere. Honestly, if I was being realistic with my shot list, it's the whole movie. The whole fucking movie. I only talked about 19 of them. I could talk about 100 of them. Probably 200.
The distorted voice that they use always scares me because it's always like so loud and I'm just like, ah! Like I jump every time. It's like silence. I'm like, okay. It freaks me out. The overhead show, you said that already. I'm a little sad that we lost Austin Butler because I think it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I like that they're not too precious with a story, and they're like, they're telling a story that they need to tell or things to go.
Go ahead.
No, you're continuing her thing, so go.
I think that even though they're there for like a small amount of time, we got so much out of him.
Yeah.
I think that like they wrapped it up in the right way.
I mean, he redeemed Elvis for me, that's for sure. So good job.
I don't think of him and think of Elvis now, so that's very, very important.
Yeah.
Bravo, sir.
Yeah.
Do you all want to know kind of a big change from the book to the movie?
And this movie?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the book, a lot more time passes between the events of 1 and 2.
Oh, okay.
Like years. So Lady Jessica has the baby. And the baby is born with like the mind of an adult. From a very young age, she's like fully conscious. And I think, I forget, she's like a toddler, 2 or 3, when the final things happen. And I believe she's the one that kills the Baron and says, hello, grandfather, as she kills him.
Damn.
Oh. Well, I'm sad we missed that.
I don't know. I don't know if I'd like that. I feel like it would make sense to have Timmy do it just because we already know him. He's established. Maybe that works out better in the book just because they have more time.
Right. The revenge on his father.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because his death, like, really fuels him for a lot of the movie, which I think they did a good job of establishing in the first movie how close he was to him and how much he meant to him. Because even when he encounters Josh Brolin again, he's like, that was my Duke. That was my, you know, like they served him so well, and he'll die for Timmy forever for that reason.
And how different Duke Leto was from other Dukes and other families. Like, he was a kind man. He was a thoughtful man. He was not a revengeful, power-seeking man.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, people with those natures don't last in stories like this, because it's
right.
They always go first, which is awful, but, you know, that's how it is.
I heard someone say that if you have power, the red flag to look for of people in power is, do they like it? Because you have power, it should be a burden, and it should be hard, and it should be a struggle. So if someone is having a grand time and it's easy and it's not hard for them, that's the problem. There's a problem.
Yeah.
So I wonder, we'll see, like, with Paul and how he adjusts to being who he is. But I think that's probably why Chani is like, you didn't want this. You told me you didn't want this.
And
yet you're here getting it. And saying, I am Lisa Nagaib. So it's very interesting. Mm. So my brain is my brain. And so whenever they go to, like, the cave with all the ammunition or whatever, and they're like, only your genetic heritage can open, like, the cave, right? So Timmy's got to put his finger in the whatever. I was reminded of the movie Richie Rich. Did y'all ever see that movie?
Mm-hmm. Oh my god, yes.
So, for those who haven't seen it, and Richie Rich is rich. He comes from a rich family. And so they have all of their, like, family, I guess, treasures up in, like, a Mount Rushmore type mountain.
Yes.
And so in the movie, the burglar, there's one, he tries to kidnap the parents to get them to open the safe. And so the joke of it is that it's not like their handprints are like, or it is, but it's a mixture of that, and they have to sing, like, a duet together in order for the vault to open. And so I don't know why I thought of that as, like, the same thing. Anyways, I should have just left that note off. But
I love it.
I should watch that movie again. It's been 1,000 years.
It's literally,
I have not thought about Richie Rich in forever.
That's me amazing. Either,
but I just think that was so funny how they had to sing a duet to open it, and they were like, oh, I love you. And the burglar was like, all right, fine. Like, do I really want this treasure that bad? Like, all right. Anyway, so Macaulay Culkin, Richie Rich, watch it. It's fun. So, any last notes?
I love this movie.
I don't think so.
Obviously.
Okay, we can go through categories now then.
Categories.
All right, so I think I know the answer, but what do we think it should be nominated for Best Picture?
Absolutely.
Exactly. That's what I thought.
No question.
Okay. Another yes. Do you think this movie should be nominated for Best Cinematography?
Fuck yeah.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, what about
I'm calling it now. I'm calling it now. Okay. This is my winner.
What about sound?
Oh, wait.
Do you want to go?
Yes.
Okay, so fucking cinematography nominated is The Brutalist, Dune Part 2, Emilia Perez, Maria, and Nosferatu.
I have seen one other one that is also pretty fucking amazing, but I'm going to say Dune would still win.
Dune's my winner, but I've only seen two, so. Sound. Best sound.
Yes.
It should be there. It's nominated against A Complete Unknown, Emilia Perez, Wicked, and The Wild Robot.
Win.
I'm going to say yes, just because I love it. Anna, any thoughts?
No thoughts.
Okay.
I love it.
Best visual effects.
Yes.
It's nominated with Alien Romulus, Better Man, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and Wicked.
You know, Alien Romulus was really fucking good, actually. So
I've heard. That's what I've heard. Yeah.
It's super good. Watch it.
Is it a scary movie? You watched it?
It is a scary movie. This year, I'm trying new things. So this last year, I watched scary movies.
Oh, my God.
I watched The Substance. I watched Alien Romulus. I watched some other scary
now. Wow. We really were holding you back, wasn't I? Damn. Sorry.
Oh my God, chill. I actually asked Anna.
Made her watch them with me.
For a list. Yeah.
But you didn't.
You did ask me for a list. I sent it to you and Johnny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, that's what.
And they said I should. I'm
watching. I did. That's why. Those are the ones I'm watching.
The speed at which I cranked that list out was remarkable to me.
Hilarious. I was like, well, she texted back immediately. So
I promise you, there was not a single thing written down. And I was like, oh, got you. Here. Wow. And then I was like, let me put these into categories.
It was incredible. It was incredible. It's like my own personal letterbox. It was amazing.
That's cute.
Okay, I just noticed my error on the master doc. Sorry about that.
Oh, girl. Just so you know, I always go and edit mine all. So because it doesn't matter. I wasn't going to tell you because why am I going to do that to you? That doesn't make sense. Because
I'm a dumb.
I'll just fix it. Like, because when I first did, I was like, oh, the same guy was nominated for Slumdog Millionaire, also nominated for this. Amazing. I'm like, wait, I can't be right. Anyway, so production design. Yay, nay.
Absolutely. Yes. I'm obsessed 100%. With the production design.
It's nominated against The Brutalist, Conclave, Nosferatu, and Wicked.
There are some strong production design this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to rewatch some of the other ones to really make my decision.
Yeah, agreed. So other than Best Director, which you can all agree that Denis needs to be there, is there any other categories that you think it should be nominated for?
Best Supporting Actress, Zendaya.
Okay. Costumes,
yeah.
Costumes. Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to say Score, but he won last year. So for Dune or the year before.
Let him win again. So I don't mind.
I'm fine with that.
Let's do it again.
Do it again. I think that's it. Any last thoughts before we close her up?
Lisa Nagaib.
Exactly.
Lisa Nagaib.
So that's gonna be all. That's gonna be all for us today. Thank you so much for listening to We Have Thoughts. If you've been hanging out with us, you can follow and listen to us on Spotify or your podcast app of choice. Make sure you like, subscribe, star, follow, come talk to us on Instagram and Twitter. We Have Thoughts 3. And watch this space for the rest of the Best Picture nominees. And remember, power over spice is power over all. Yeah. Bye.
Bye.